Senior Focus.
Good afternoon, everyone. It's Anne-Marie Curry, your presenter, and this is Senior Focus, focusing on emergency management. What else? When we've just been through what we've been through in Auckland. So the issues are staring us in the face, I think. But let's talk about them and unpack them a little bit, because with the lessons learnt from the Christchurch earthquake, we know that it needs a strong mayoral response. It needs a calm, trusted leader who's not floundering, flapping around, wondering what is going to be said next and who's going to say it. There needs to be coordination of all the services and responses so that people know the order of command, they know who's covering what, and they know who to look to for leadership. And there needs to be accurate messaging. There needs to be simple, clear messages that people can follow and relay and not get confused by. Now, when people have died in tragedies because they've tried to escape from floodwater, or they've tried to move through fast-moving floodwater, and they haven't had the experience, the knowledge of how to do that safely, or the equipment, and they haven't perhaps recognised that there was help available. It's really important that we don't try and do post-mortems at this stage, and this is not the purpose of this program. But in talking about the issues, I think it's fair to say that emergency management as a whole changed a lot after the Christchurch earthquake. And in some ways, it got better. But despite giving lots of feedback to the restructured unit within council about the ageing population, how rapidly it's growing in numbers, particularly those over 80 who are vulnerable, and the numbers living alone, and the numbers with disabilities who have difficulty getting out of places in an emergency. This kind of information is very basic. It's very important. It's very factual. It's not emotional. And it's stuff that needs to be incorporated into the planning with a very sharp focus. And I don't think it's actually happened. In some parts of New Zealand, councils have a database of those who live alone or who are disabled or who have vulnerabilities and would suffer in an emergency. And that database is managed by the council, but it's shared with the emergency management system as a whole, so that whoever's doing whatever rescue procedures or operations, whatever planning, they know where these people are. They know how many of them there are, how many stretchers they need to lift people and carry them out, and so on. I don't think that information is available in Auckland at all that I'm aware of. It might be done by church groups amongst their members. It might be done by some private establishments that are retirement villages. You know, there will be cases where this does exist at an organisational level, but there's nothing across the council region wide or across the council family that would fit into the emergency management system that would actually empower people. Obviously, those that got involved on Friday when the emergency scaled rapidly up into something major, those who had specialist training, the lifeguard teams, those who had some suitable vehicles and life boats and so on, they got into gear and they rescued and saved probably 70 or 80 odd people, and that was quite amazing. But those were largely able-bodied people who were already out in the thick of it that could be seen and identified. And what I'm suggesting here is that we know from a lot of research that has been done that many disabled people, many older people are bedridden. They're not likely to be moving in a hurry. They're not likely to go out in this type of event to seek a connection or to make a connection that would help them. And they're not even sure who to contact. So I think there's a lot of work that needs to be done in this area, and it needs to be prioritised and not something that is a tack-on. It's got to be an integral part of the planning process so that it's in everybody's minds who's involved in the planning, not a forgotten afterthought. And certainly when I look at some cities like Palmerston North that had a register of older people, disabled people, people who lived alone, and those who were likely to need to be lifted on a stretcher to be taken out in an event of emergency, whether it be fire or flooding or anything of that type. That register was updated about every 6 months, and so that it was known to be reasonably accurate, and it was trusted both by older people themselves, by the community leaders, and by organisations that work in the relief area generally. Now, having worked on the front line post-Christchurch earthquake situation, I have a first-hand experience of a disaster of this scale, and it taught me a great deal, and I do believe that it empowered me to advocate for older people. It's what really shaped my energies and my direction over 10 years. And I do think that we need to go back to the drawing board, and we need to look much more carefully at the planning for the age-friendly city. Because although some of us spoke up during that exercise that was conducted over 2 years previous, before lockdown even, the work that went on in that time, canvassing 3,000 seniors in Auckland for their opinions, was quite substantial and quite high quality, and it focused on issues to do with housing, issues to do with public transport, and issues to do with communications, which is relevant in this case. But it didn't specifically target emergency management. And I think given the impact of climate change, the way we're getting torrential rains, we're getting thunderstorms, severe ones, we're getting the potential for tsunamis, we're getting the potential of volcanic eruptions, things are happening on a much bigger scale now. And because of that, the threats are so much greater. The time to navel gaze and look out the window and cast your eye around hoping somebody's got something to say, like we saw on Friday at the press conference, that kind of behaviour is just completely inappropriate and inadequate. And we just need people to be a lot more focused, a lot calmer, a lot more prepared in terms of knowing who is doing what's being coordinated, how it's being done, and who's in charge of the messaging, and what kind of messaging do we actually need to be giving out in what sort of situations. And I think that there is a lot of this knowledge available, but it's not being handled appropriately by the right people. So we need a rethink, and it's quite heartwarming to think that the mayor is actually prepared to do a 24-hour review of the responses that were given on Friday. And I would hazard a guess and say that it's not so much the responses themselves that were given, it's what wasn't given that is probably more significant. What was missing? What are the gaps in the knitting? That's what we really need people to be focused on. So the review will be interesting. It will be helpful, I hope. But it will point to the fact that we don't have a database of vulnerable people that need assistance in an emergency. And I would like to see coordination from amongst leaders in the senior community to push for this. And I will be doing my utmost behind the scenes along these lines. I think it's something that it will be worthwhile feeding into government, to Carmel Cefalone at the Ministry of Social Development, as well as the new Prime Minister, and as well as whoever's selected to be the Minister for Local Government. We know there are ministerial changes in the offing at the moment. They could be even announced today. But they certainly will be probably well known by the time you hear this program, because I always make my program in advance. I don't always have a crystal ball to gaze into. But certainly there will need to be messaging to central government from the senior community, and will also have to go to Auckland Council and to various people in various positions. But I'd like to give a really big shout out to three Auckland councillors who just did an exceptional job over the weekend, and particularly over Friday night into Saturday, because I don't think they got a wink of sleep. And Desley Simpson is one, because she used social media to update people right through the night. Richard Hills is another, who used a Twitter account to keep in touch, and he was responsible for helping get information to various MPs, like Jacinda Ardern, for example. And so they were able to be more effective in their own electorates. In addition, Elsley Piner in South Auckland helped galvanise the community when it came to housing issues, bedding, clothing. He's still doing it. He's been on TV putting a plea out for things, and the man works with a heart of compassion. He's not doing it as a politician. He's doing it because he's got a deep passion and love for the community that he's served for many years. And I just thought it was really special how those people stepped up so well. And I just wanted to mention that, because a lot of people will owe them a lot. They may not even realise that those are the people they owe a deuce of thanks to. But I would just like to suggest that it's really the council has a responsibility, the staff at the council, the policy people, the mayor and his office. There are responsibilities there that need to be exercised with more finesse, and it shouldn't be up to individuals to do the final rescuing on this scale. I think those people have demonstrated that the system was failing people, really, and I'm just impressed that they stood up as well as they did. We saw in Christchurch how volunteers were critical, the student army, and they were well dovetailed into the particular community structures that the council was working with down there, and that the government was feeding funding into. The structure that the Salvation Army provided, backed by government funding, was really a critical intervention to bring food and financial assistance, clothing vouchers, and just to tap into the level of distress that people were experiencing, so that when there was mental health issues, where there were people living alone, just out of hospital, where there were people who were desperately needing to get a complete break out of the earthquake zone and out of the experiencing mini quakes every few hours, they were able to get all that kind of relief. And it was all so well coordinated. And the student army was an integral part of delivering things within that structural response. Now, that also meant that there was a good local knowledge on the ground. There were people who were relevant spokespeople who were able to communicate with various communities that might not have English as a first language, or people who were new in the area, or people who were just out of hospital. So I think there were many ways in which there was a tremendous effort went in, and it was tremendously successful overall. I would like to see that Auckland could step up, because I've been gravely concerned over the last 10 years. I've said on numerous occasions when emergency management topics were discussed, I would say I would not like to see something on the scale of Christchurch happen in Auckland, because I don't think we're well enough prepared. And I have made that comment many times. I think even on the program some years back, but I have made it. And so it's sad for me to have to reflect on the fact that the senior community hasn't really been heard, hasn't been fully listened to on this issue of emergency management needing to be tailored for the fact that one in four Aucklanders will be over 65 by 2035. And we're rapidly going to head to that. Time passes quickly. And if you want to put things in place, you need to start making sure that your 10-year plan now is going to be fit for purpose when the situation is fully matured. And this is what is lacking, is the picture of the demographics. Now, there are people who are quite well known for their knowledge in this area. Emeritus Professor Paul Spoonley regularly makes comments about the demographics in Auckland, and he has raised issues surrounding an ageing population and what are some of the primary needs. And I wonder, in fact, I haven't actually heard him on emergency management, but I'll be very interested in how he commentates on this in the future, because I suspect it's going to become a much more serious topic, not something that's going away anytime soon. And these events, while they might be, the most severe that Auckland's experienced as a weather event, they're not going to be one-off things. We are going to experience this kind of thing again and again, as our climate is going to become more tropical. We're going to have more tropical downpours, more like monsoon rains. And as someone commented, the view on the television was rather what you'd expect to see in India, not in New Zealand. But this is exactly where we're headed, that we're going to go into these more extreme weather events. And so we can't just say, oh, well, it's not going to happen very often, so we don't need to do that much. And cool, we dodged a bullet there, or some of us did, but some of us didn't, and we still haven't got the full picture yet. So let's look seriously at asking the hard questions, talking to our MPs and our local board reps and our councillors at the council. We need to really start the conversation seriously about what they are prepared to do about identifying those that might need to be carried out, those that might need to have backup arrangements for housing, and actually assess what the need really is and how it's best delivered, and work out a structure that works, that's going to actually be able to be put into operation at very short notice. Because it's been done elsewhere in the world, and it has, I think Kiwis are very practical, so there's no reason why we can't do this. And there's no reason why we can't be proud of what we can do. And we can save lives, and we can actually get to know our neighbours and our communities better, and we can better relate to those around us. And I think, as we found in Christchurch, those communities that were very well connected, those communities where people worked hard, networking, they got out and in amongst the people, and they found out a lot of information about who was there and how they, what needs they had and how they moved around and what they did. Then when the earthquakes came, these communities were very well organised. They were very well able to respond at the drop of a hat, and they were able to use social media very effectively and network intensively on the ground, and they had very successful outcomes. And Lyttelton was one of those really noteworthy communities. And they just stood out. They shone because they were prepared. And it's that preparation that counts. It's so vital. So that's what we want to see more of in Auckland. I think it's time for a break. And I've chosen James Taylor, You've Got a Friend, which is a Carole King composition. And I think it's very appropriately because this is the time when you would want to have a friend. So enjoy. I'll get back shortly.
When you're down and troubled and you need some loving care and nothing, oh, nothing is going right, close your eyes and think of me. Brighten up, whoa, even your darkest night. You just call out my name, and you know wherever I am, I'll come running to see you again. Spring, summer, or fall, all you've got to do is call, and I'll be there, yeah, yeah, yeah. Now you've got a friend. If the sky
everyone. I'm wanting to just wind the program up with some suggestions about what we can all be doing differently and better in terms of preparation for what might be the next event, whether it's still part of this one or a separate event. The first thing I would ask everyone to do is to check what kind of emergency supplies they keep in the way of food, water and meds and documents, because I think that it's a very good opportunity and a reminder and a wake-up call to check on your own preparation and look at these things, because at the moment there must be panic buying going on. There's sections and suburbs of the city that you can't buy bread, meat or a lot of basics, and this is really sad. So we do need to actually check on our own supplies and how we're going to maintain them in the future. Next thing we also need is how do we, if we have to leave in a hurry, have we got the clothing that we need in a waterproof way that we can easily carry it in a small backpack or something like that. And I'm certainly going to invest in gumboots because I think I can see a real need to actually have gumboots that I can use in that sort of situation. Now, checking on your insurance is another thing. And I would recommend the independent website Money Hub because particularly for cars, they give you a very good breakdown, a comparison of the vehicle size and engine size and so on and relative value and then what it will cost with various companies to insure it. I do think they are one of the better ways of assessing what's on offer. And with house cover, you do need to calculate the building costs, the rebuild costs and so on. And that needs to be accurate with the current rising costs. So working on that system, if you haven't recently done your insurance, I think it's time for an upgrade because all the costs of replacement have gone up. Having up-to-date photos of things that you have insured, that particularly big ticket items like your car or like particular features on your house, I think that's very useful when you're making a claim. And something I saw recently, which I think now becomes an essential to have, is a waterproof pocket wallet of a reasonable size. It's like a small handbag pouch, but you can fit folded documents into it, passport and your phone. And because it's waterproof on a very significant level, it's not just plastic. It's proper specific fabric that's waterproof inside and out. It means that you can keep things safe and you can wear it around your neck. You can slip it into an inside raincoat pocket. You can keep it dry and you can keep it with you in a safe way and it's easy to cart. And I think that would be worth its weight in gold. Another thing I would say is check what sort of torch and batteries you've got and make sure you've got LED because they're so much brighter, they can be seen and they last a lot longer and that you don't have to worry that the batteries are running out. And last but not least, a small solar panel the size of a computer keyboard. Not very big at all, but it can be used to charge a phone and it can be very, very useful because it wasn't very useful on Friday night, but if you have used it or you've got it there, you've got a source of power because I noticed that quite a few seniors were caught out, particularly in West Auckland, without power, without water, and no means of charging their phone to get updates. So that small investment of, say, $90 for one of those solar panels is worth its weight in gold because you can get so much out of it. It costs nothing to operate and you've got it for a reasonable period of time. It costs very little on a daily basis. So those are my suggestions for getting prepared for whenever the next thing is that's coming. And you don't have to do it all at once. You don't have to do it all today. But if you make a plan and you work out how to spread the costs and the effort over the next 3 or 4 weeks, you'll be well prepared next time. I thank you very much for your willingness to be listening and tuning in, and we want to stay in touch with our listeners and what their experiences are, and we want to learn from them. And so any stories you've got you want to share with us, feel free to contact us via the Planet website and share with us what your experiences have been, because that way we can all learn. So thank you very much, and we look forward to having you with us next week. Bye.
Get together with Senior Focus next Sunday at 5:25 p.m. on Planet FM 104.6, or listen online at any time at planetaudio.org.nz/Senior Focus. And do note, Senior Focus is one word.